This is episode number 756 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Supergirl and Spider-Man. Our comics this week will be Action Comics number 969, Slam number 1, Micronauts number 8, and Dead Inside number 1. And our BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza this week will feature Star Wars Rogue One.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the off for the holidays, Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, and I love it. Finished up yesterday afternoon, left work early for a little bit, and I don't go back until Monday.
Yes, I will not bore you with my horror story, but I started the day in traveling to Boston, which is a good hour and 45-minute ride with no traffic. And then it took me 2.5 hours to get back at the end of the day. And I drove straight here.
Yep.
So that we could talk about comic books. Because this is the show that we're squeezing in before the holiday.
Yeah.
We didn't know if we were going to get one this week.
Yep. And I do have a quick funny story.
Lay it on me.
Since I had today off, I'm driving around, figuring, you know, I'm going to go do some shopping.
Just doing your thing.
And as I'm driving by, I see McDonald's. I said, you know what?
I would like to eat there.
I could use a triple cheeseburger meal.
Absolutely.
So got my meal, got my fries, and I had the fries. And usually, I will have, when it gets towards the bottom of the fry thing, I'll just start like scooping them in my mouth.
Shovel them right in.
I hit a bump so hard.
I already love this story.
Fries went everywhere. Salt in my eye. And it, again, the thing, whatever I hit, it might have been a person. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I hit something so hard, my CD player skipped and the radio shut off and didn't go back on.
It was a fry-pocalypse.
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do because it's like, oh, my gosh, my fries. Oh, my gosh, my music.
Oh, my gosh, my eyeballs.
What am I supposed to do? Yeah, then the stinging started.
That is too freaking funny, man.
Yep.
That's a good story. I don't have a funny story like that to top for our new segment, but I do have an update. Last week, we talked about the story of the young woman who went to a comic book store after seeing Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode with the Alex and Maggie storyline.
Yes.
And the comic shop worker, whose name is Mary, through conversation found out that this girl was a young girl who had not come out yet and was really struggling with, you know, what her options were and just sort of dealing with that. And Supergirl, that storyline really was very inspirational to her. She ended up giving the girl a bunch of comics and the story kind of went viral after that. We have an update for that this week. A woman, Mary, who works at the comic book store, posted a big thank you to DC Comics for sending this amazing package. It warmed my heart and I can't wait to share it with her. DC Comics and the CW ended up sending like a care package to the store for this comic shop employee to share with this girl when she comes into the store again. And the letter that came with it, she took a picture of. And I'll just read you the letter. It says, Mary, we wanted to send you a package to show our appreciation for your kindness and bravery. Your story touched so many of us here at DC, WBTV, the CW, and Supergirl, so thank you for sharing it. It's people like you who truly make the comics industry great. We've collected a few items we thought you might like and have included some things for the girl you helped as well in case you see her again. DC Entertainment, WB, the CW, and Supergirl. And so they included a ton of stuff. From the Bombshells line, a great Batwoman figure, a bunch of Supergirl t-shirts and memorabilia, some Harley Quinn stuff, a picture of Melissa Benoist, which I'm assuming is a signed picture of her, Supergirl mugs and all this kind of stuff. And Shyler Lee, who plays Alex on the show, said of that situation, said, this is awesome, Mary. Your sincerity has made us all grateful. Thank you to the CW and DC for recognizing these girls. And so within that thread, Mary, who is the works at the comic book store, said that she had had contact with this girl again.
Yeah.
And that they were going to continue to – so she was going to find a way to share this with her, and they were going to continue to talk and stuff like that. So very cool story. And we actually got a few emails from people over the past week or so just talking about how that story affected them, and that was really, you know, nice to hear. And again, with – the times that we live in now and the fact that young kids need to see themselves represented in the stories that they see and that they read and that they hear and all that kind of stuff. This was just a really nice, inspirational story. And it's great to see that it continues to be very positive.
Mm.
So that was pretty cool. And then, in comic book news, I have a story about Spider-Man where a few weeks ago, Marvel had held a press conference for spoilers about the Dead No More clone conspiracy, which we're in the middle of now. I think I talked about on the last episode the Ben Reilly situation. Mm-hmm. Well, at this press conference, they had teased this upcoming Spider title that was going to spin out of this event. And there is a special Omega issue that's going to be wrapping up this clone conspiracy event. And it says, CBR picked up on the loose thread from the Clone Conspiracy Omega solicit, which included the following phrase, the next big spider book by Peter David and Mark Bagley. We're still a few issues away from the conclusion of Clone Conspiracy, as Marvel doesn't quite seem ready to say what the title is yet, but that does seem to be a confirmation of an upcoming spider series by Peter David and Mark Bagley together, book by the publisher who already teased a new spider title. So that's kind of cool to think that Peter David is going to be writing and Mark Bagley is going to be doing art on a new Spider title. I don't know if that's going to be a Scarlet Spider series. Who's to say? That would be very interesting. Or I know it's not going to be another 2099 series, and it makes me wonder what the fate of the 2099 series is, because Peter David is writing that now, and I believe Will Sliney is the one doing the artwork on that. So I'm not sure what that means for the 2099 series, but cool that we're getting another Spider-Man series coming out of that. So
yeah, very cool. And I also have a story that I completely forgot that I was going to share with you, Brian.
Share it.
And our listeners, because this affects you very much.
It does.
It does. So IDW just recently finished the their toy line, the toy crossover Revolution.
Revolution, which sort of started to unify all the universes of their properties, correct?
Yes. Now, the tagline was Universe United, Universe Divided.
So, I see what they did there.
I like
that's
that.
Good.
So coming out of Revolution is now Reconstruction. So we have a whole slew of books. I'll be talking about one of them that ties in the Micronauts. But we have ROM. We have Mask, which is coming out. We have a new series called Revolutionaries, which is a team that will come out of this one. Optimus Prime has his own. We got a Transformers Lost Light. We have Transformers. We have Micronauts still going. But I didn't mention G.I. Joe, did I?
No.
G.I. Joe number one hits, and it says G.I. Joe returns as the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe. So there's a lot of stock in G.I. Joe right now.
I am
really getting excited about this. Aubrey Sitterson, is the writer of the new series. So what got me all excited about this one was at the end of it, they have all these questions in here. He's talking about what the series, he hopes to bring it, you know, G.I. Joe to the next level. He says Larry Hama's run is impossible to beat.
Sure.
But that's what he's striving for. But right down it says, one last question, who's your favorite G.I. Joe? And he goes, it's a toss-up between Rock and Roll and?
Quick Kick.
Quick Kick.
Yes.
Keep your eyes for those two guys as we got big, big, big things planned for them in the first year.
Interesting.
So I was very excited to see that. Quick Kick is
excited,
going to be.
But it's also a little disappointing because I haven't yet written my epic Quick Kick return saga.
Yeah.
That I have been kicking around in my head for the past several years now. I was going to actually write a Kindle World story because you can write fan fiction basically for these particular worlds, and the G.I. Joe universe is one of them that you can write that for. So I'm very excited though for a Quick Kick to come back.
Yeah.
If he comes back and is part of the proper G.I. Joe universe moving forward, that opens the door up for him to show up in the movies, that opens the door for him to show up in future cartoons. I am all about that. As I've said before, Quick Kick, my favorite G.I. Joe of all time, and that's awesome.
Very excited to see that. So I am really looking forward to G.I. Joe number one.
Yeah, that's a good place for me to jump back in because I fell off of every time they launched a new series, I jumped on it. I did not read a ton of the Cobra stuff, but the last G.I. Joe series that I read from start to finish was the Devil's Due one.
The World War III.
The World War III one.
Amazing.
Which was fantastic from start to finish. Great stuff. That was when they started that series. Cobra Commander was like nowhere to be found, and yep. It was really, really good. And I had been reading the Larry Hama G.I. Joe continuation.
Greatest American Hero.
Yeah, A Real American Hero.
A Real American Hero,
which picked up from his run in Marvel. And I think that's still going.
I think so.
And I had, but I fell off probably about 10 issues ago or something like that. So getting back into G.I. Joe, always a good thing. That is one of my favorite properties of all time.
Yeah, it's a great place to start because we do have a number one.
Well, fantastic, Matthew. That's all that we have for the news. So we can talk about comics in a minute, but obviously we have to give a plug to our friends at Viking Oils LLC. .com if you're going to the website, Matthew.
Yes. Keep yourself bundled, keep yourself warm, but also keep your beard protected. I have been seeing a lot of people. I guess being a non-beardy, I see a lot of beards walking around. I see a lot of that. And Gary was talking about all these beard cons that they have, shows.
Wait a second.
Yes. Beard cons.
Okay.
Yeah. They have places where people
I'm going to have to marinate on that one a little bit.
Yeah. And it's a place where you sell your products, you have all
sorts
of things.
From a vendor standpoint, yes. That makes sense, yes.
But I guess it's a bunch of people that walk around and just celebrate
Look
the
at my beard. Check out my beard, bro. Nice beard.
That's it, exactly.
You got a good-looking beard.
And
your beard
is
nice.
It is cold enough now where I'm envious of you and your beard.
I am in that interesting phase now where I get some compliments and some concerned looks wherever I go, which is always interesting to me. But today at work, I saw a woman who I haven't seen probably in 5 years. And she loved the beard.
Good.
She was like, oh, the beard looks great. I get it. That's all I need.
Yep.
That keeps me going another 3 months, lady.
Yep.
That and Viking Oils, Matthew. Yeah.
Yes. VikingsOilsLLC.com. And you can like them on Facebook.
There you go. All right. Let's get into comics. And you are going to kick us off this week with Action Comics.
Action Comics. So I was at break talking to 3 or 4 comic book people yesterday, in fact, at work as we're recording this on Thursday. And I said, hands down, Superman and Action Comics 1 and 2 for what DC is putting out right now. Those are the best books to be reading. If you're not reading them, you need to be. And this one right now, we are in an arc. And it was funny trying to explain to somebody what is going on. Like, oh, what's going on in comic books right now? That was the answer.
And you're like, oh, there's this Superman from another world, but he's our Superman now because our Superman died. But then this guy's got a son and he's going to be in a new series with Damian. It's going to be awesome.
So it was pretty much that. throwing in the fact, so what has happened, we all know that the Superman of this Earth is not ours. He came from another Earth.
Correct.
The Superman of the DC Rebirth world is dead, buried, yet we have a Clark Kent walking around.
Yes.
And this Clark Kent does not have powers, and he doesn't see himself, he doesn't remember himself being Superman.
Wait a second, dial that back. There's a Clark Kent walking around?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I did not know that.
So that is the sort of the mystery we have going on right now. We have Superman's Lois, who is now, because Lois is no longer with us because she sort of imploded with power.
Right. She became one of the two superwomen.
Yep.
She apparently died at the end of Superwoman number one.
Yep.
So now Rebirth or pre-rebirth, New 52 Lois and New 52 Superman were thought to be dead.
Yes. Yep. And so you have this Lois who's now sort of trying to get back. She's trying to do this Lois's work. She's trying to get into the Daily Planet, help out there, do all that stuff. And there's a little bit of a confusion. But the biggest issue is this whole other who was Clark Kent. So in this story, we're in part 3 of Men of Steel. And you start off with Superman standing there and he's just or floating up in the sky. He's looking around. And Lois and Clark are on the rooftop. And Clark is saying, I don't understand why he's floating there just doing nothing. And Lois is like, he's looking for Luther. You got to understand that. He just got stolen by some aliens that are going to kill him because he is going to do some really bad stuff and they're going to kill him before he does it. And so you've got Clark who's saying to Superman, yelling up, going, why are you even looking for him? This is good. We don't want him here anymore. He's a bad dude. And Superman is saying, we can't do that. This is a human being. We've got to preserve him. We've got to do whatever.
It's not
We've
how
got
I
to
roll, bro.
Right. So you have, and it's interesting because you have Jonathan on a rooftop also looking at this thing going on as he and Clark are arguing. Clark is saying, look, him being taken away is, might have saved a million lives. And they're like, no, can't do it. So then Superman lands and he says, oh, they took him off this planet, but I have an energy source. I'll be right back. So he flies away. And now we go to a distant planet in a distant galaxy. And now you're seeing the aliens that have taken
Lex Luthor.
And Lex is in his super suit and he is down there and they're talking about, one of them's like, he should be dead. And they said, yeah, but you know what? This time he brought him back. He's like, but that's not really what we do. We just kill him right there and take care of it.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Does Lex need his super suit? Is that, that's connected to his overall health, is it not?
I'm not quite sure. It could be, but he's a regular old human being without the suit.
Right, right.
So, I mean, even that part of it, it is, you know, he still needs that suit. And the two aliens are talking to each other, and they don't look like the alien that abducted him. And they're saying, well, you know what? It's the first time for this. We'll see how this happens. And then you see Lex with a big hand on his head, squeezing his head, saying, hard to concentrate. It's like your brain's tied up in knots. And you've got these two aliens that are basically torturing him. And he's saying, you know what? No matter what you guys do to me, I'm still superior to you Cretans. And they're like, well, you know, this is not really that much fun. And then they neutralize his armor. And apparently, you know, that really affects him and hurts him. So it might be tied in with him. And he's telling them, you know, you've got the wrong man. I don't know what you're doing this to me for. And the alien turns around and says, Lex Luthor, you're wrong. And he goes, you know, so I'm going to tell you the whole story about this. And he tells the guy the tale of himself. He's telling Lex that he was a soldier that basically lost everything, was taken on by a group of celestials. And they are saying, you know what, we are trying to fix and right the wrongs that are going to happen. So the scene that we have is this one guy going up to this woman who's standing in a tree saying, you know, we have another mission for you. And he goes, I'm done. I'm too many years of bloodshed. I can't do this anymore. And she goes, well, I understand that you want to do that. You're a great person and you've helped us out so much and you've helped out everybody. But we just need you to do one more mission. And he's like, you know what, find somebody else who wants blood in their hands. And then she calls to another guy and says, you know what? You heard what happened. He said, yeah. And he says, just bring him back. And he goes, well, you know, he's got a lot of blood on his hands, like he said, and he's not doing this and feeling well about it. And she goes, please just talk to him. This is the biggest one we have to deal with. So as the alien goes down there and you see him watching bubbles floating up in the air, and they have a picture of a child and a woman. You're assuming that was his wife and child that were killed. All of a sudden, a hand grabs him, those bubbles disappear, and you have the other guy that's with him saying, you know, please, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I need to talk to you. And he's saying, you know, we're friends, and you're lucky because I would kill you for doing what you just did. And he's like, look, I know you're angry at me, and I know that things aren't good right now for you, and you're not in a good spot, but we need to do this one more mission. So he says to him, he says, you know, this power, you'll want to hear this. And he's explaining that that Lex, because Darkseid is dead, Lex is going to sort of work his way into taking over for Darkseid.
It makes perfect sense.
Taking over Apocalypse. So
there's a position to be filled, and he believes he's qualified to fill it.
Absolutely qualified. So the guy, he says to him, how can we let this happen? And he goes, all right, prepare the pods. We're leaving for Earth. So then you go up, and now you have back to what's going on now. And Lex is saying, this makes no sense to me. And you're telling me that I am going to do something that is going to have drastic effects on the entire galaxy. You can't do that. You can't kill somebody. You can't execute a man for something he hasn't done. And they said, you know, every one of my targets all say the same thing. And he goes, yeah, but you don't understand. You can't do this. Why haven't you killed me already? Do you doubt that I'm going to do all this stuff? And he's like, you know, he's starting to kind of play a little bit of mind games with him, because Lex can be a manipulator. And he's like, you know, the other guy's saying, look, he should be dead. We should just kill him right now. And you're seeing that the guy that was having second thoughts about even doing the mission to begin with is starting to maybe think a little bit like, well, maybe we shouldn't do it. So as this is starting to wind down, Superman flies into a place. He goes into a building and sees sort of a portal to this world where Lex Luthor is. And he gets in there, he sees it, he touches some things to see if it's stable enough. He sees a portal open up, and he hears Lex being spoke to about what he did wrong. and he sees that the portal is open, and he jumps in it, and the part says right here, I have to save Lex Luthor. And then the next issue says, the enemy of my enemy. So amazing story, great fun. With the two Superman books, with Action and Superman, you're getting really two different stuff. You're getting the punch-up Superman stuff in this one, where you're getting sort of the good old farm-living, kid-raising kind of
It's the family. Yeah, the other one's the family book.
Yeah, and you're getting in Superman proper. So, again, they're definitely the two best books that DC's putting out right now, and that's saying a lot because there's a lot of good DC books.
You have been very high on the Superman books since this whole Rebirth thing started.
Very good stuff.
I am going to go over to Boom. And I'm going to be hyperbolic now and say that this might be my new favorite comic book. It's called Slam. It is created by Pamela Ribon and Veronica Fish. Now, you remember that we interviewed Veronica Fish at Plastic City Comic Con this summer.
First annual.
And this was right after Slam had just been announced. And so we didn't get to really talk too much about it, but I was extremely excited about it because it's about roller derby. And I love roller derby.
Fun stuff.
And I was a kid who, I don't know if I talked about it on the show or not, but when I was a kid, I basically grew up at Enfield Roller World. I had my own skates. I was there all the time. I was actually a pretty good roller skater for many years, and they had an arcade there.
Yep.
Like, super influential, very fond memories of basically growing up in that place, which is now our local comic book shop. That can't be said enough.
Works out very well.
Our comic book shop is now in half of what used to be the Enfield Roller World.
The comic book shop is in the side where you would get your skates, you would hang out, and the bathrooms and the little food area.
And where the arcade was.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then where the now, what do you call it, the hardware store is the roller skating rink.
Is the actual roller rink. Yep. Uh-huh. I also took breakdancing classes.
Yes, I was going to mention that one. But wouldn't you love to get that big metal light-up sign that would light up that said reverse?
That is my dream.
Yeah.
My dream is to have a man cave where I have the roller rink sign up on the wall that will constantly toggle between ladies' choice, couples.
Reverse skate.
Yeah.
Oh, great
all
days.
Skate.
Great times.
Great stuff. Great times. Anyways, Slam is written by Pamela Ribon, illustrated by Veronica Fish, colors by Brittany Peer, letters by Jim Campbell, and the editor is Shannon Waters. And again, another awesome book from Boom. Boombox is the same imprint that Giant Days comes out under, and that is another one of my favorite books. This book is basically a love letter to roller derby and the impact that it can have on someone's life by sort of becoming a part of it. So we start off, and we are in the back room at the Scrapes dressing room, and it's bout day. And so you see the girls sitting around, they're all getting ready to put their uniforms on, and they're getting their skates on, and they're kind of hanging out and talking. And you see that there is a rumble between, it's called the Rookie Rumble, between the Scars and the Scrapes. And so we now start to see the different skaters that are part of these teams. And you have a couple of girls who are sitting on the bench, and one saying, I wish we'd just get started already, I'm so nervous. And the other girl says, I pooped six times already. So there's a lot of nerves. You meet for the first time Jen, who is one of the skaters, and she is talking to Maisie, who is in a bathroom stall, and Maisie's saying, I can't do it. And she's saying, you have to go out there. She's saying, look, the fate of this has already been determined. You just need to go out and find out what it is. And she's like, that's a terrible philosophy. She says, I haven't even known you that long, Jen. I'm so nervous to go out there. And you see, we get to meet Jen, and I'll show you, Matt. But what they basically do for the main characters is they show you like a sketch of the character before Derby and after Derby. So pre-Derby, 6 months ago, Jennifer Chu, whose Derby name is Knockout, is getting her master's in geology, and she's very close with her parents. After Derby, she is a jammer extraordinaire. She's fearless, does not have a tattoo, good at pep talks, always roots for the underdog. So we see she is the one who has been going to school, working out a ton. She was at the gym one day, and a couple of the girls from the Derby team saw her working out and were like, oh, we need to get her on our team, gave her a flyer. She had never really known about roller derby. She ends up going to a match where the East Side Roller Girls are playing, and after seeing it, and they show a great montage of some roller derby action, and then you see her run over to the table saying, how and when do I start? Where do I sign up? I want to be a part of this. And you see at the same time, that's when Maisie is also signing up. So the book kind of follows these two girls as they get into roller derby and sort of where they're at in their lives and what's going on with them. And you see that they sort of meet as they're waiting for an Uber one night. Maisie goes home to her apartment and she's hanging out, and you see that she is just out of a relationship of 3 years that did not end well. And she's kind of in a dark place. She is trying to kind of find herself and now has decided to take part in this derby thing. She doesn't even know how to skate. And so you have Jen, who comes in and is almost kind of like a natural. She's got the raw skills, but she needs to kind of hone her talent. Whereas Maisie comes in and she just needs to learn how to stand up on her skates and not fall over. And the two of them become fast friends, and they start practicing together, and they end up becoming pretty close over a very short period of time. There's a great part in the middle of the book that says there's 10 facts about your new derby life, and I'll just read a few. It says, you will have fun. You will get hurt. You'll want to quit this forever every time, but you won't, because you love it more than anything you've ever loved in your entire life. And within all this, you're seeing the roller derby practices where everybody is kind of getting knocked around but picking each other up and kind of helping each other out and learning the ropes and stuff like that. And as the book goes on, you start to get introduced to some of the other members of the team, where, you know, there's one young woman who is sort of a jerk to all the other players on the team. There's one, there's sort of a veteran who's a little bit older than everybody else, who has been around for a long time, and she's like, has an attitude towards the new kids coming in, that kind of stuff. But what the book is mostly about is like how taking part in this is changing them. You know, the sisterhood, the camaraderie, the toughness that's coming out of it, going home every day with bruises and coming back stronger and that kind of stuff. And by the end of the book, you have Maisie and Jen, who have decided to move in together. And at the same time, that match that we saw at the beginning of the book was what they call like a draft bout. And so they all the new recruits had to go and be in a bout together. And then after that, the different teams in the league start drafting them. Mm. And so on the last page, you see that they both get the call, but they get the call from two different teams that they've been drafted to. And that's kind of how the first issue ends. But it was so awesome. First of all, Veronica Fish, amazing. And this seems like she is just loving drawing this book. Like the whole, as I mentioned at the top, it is a love letter to roller derby. Every panel, every bit of dialogue, every caption, it all is just very much a love letter to roller derby. And by the end of it, you will want to go sign up for a roller derby team by the end of the first issue. But it's everything that I hoped that it would be. I was so excited when it was announced that this book was coming out. And now that it is out and the second issue is out as well, it's fantastic. I cannot recommend it highly enough. So if you took my recommendation on Giant Days a while back and the charm and just sort of slice of life aspects of that book really stuck with you, you need to pick up Slam. Because that it has that same kind of magic, I think, after the first issue. And I can't wait to talk to Veronica Fish, hopefully next year at Plastic City Comic Con, about this project, because it's awesome.
And it's always fun when you're doing something that you love, like a project like that, that you wouldn't necessarily think would be visualized in a comic book. Emilio Velez doing that with Dodgeball Teens, grabbing something that you love and really running with it. You can see the passion in that.
Absolutely. And I am a huge fan of roller derby, as I said before. In the upcoming book in the Woodsview Murder series that I write with my buddy Jolene Haley, the second book, which will be coming out in early 2017, roller derby is
very nice.
Is a big part of that. So, yeah, I was super psyched when I heard about this project that Veronica's a part of. So I hope it does awesome.
So they came from inner space, and they're now at IDW. We're at issue number 8 of The Micronauts, written by Colin Bunn, art by Max Donbar. And the series right now, they're sort of 2 issues into the fallout of Revolution, of what's going on. And the fallout for the Micronauts is that they were trapped on Earth, and they were captured and started to be studied as what these things are. You know, what are these little human beings? Because they are very small. They're bug size. They're insect size. And there was a young woman that was working in the lab that was sort of starting to do the dissecting and the experiments on them. And she scooped them all up, grabbed them, threw them in a truck, and drove away. And as she's busting through barriers, she's getting chased. And the funniest thing, like when they're watching, and the sort of the charm and heart of this story is that you've got these people that are out, they're sort of outlanders in their own world, and now they're definitely outlanders here on Earth. And as they're driving away, they're looking up at this woman who's driving, and you're seeing that they don't understand the language, and they're saying, wow, we don't even know why she's doing this. What is the reason that she's risking, obviously, some things? And as she's talking to them, they're turning around, and they keep looking, going, yeah, she keeps talking to us, and we know we can't understand. She knows we can't understand them, but there she goes. And one of them makes a comment to her about putting her seatbelt on, and he kind of motions across his waist, and she gets that, puts the seatbelt on. And meanwhile, you've got trucks, military trucks that are chasing them down because it was a military installation that they were trapped in. And they're trying to figure out where their vehicle is. And they see that their ship is in the back of their truck. So Microtron, who's the littler robot of the two, of Microtron and Biotron, goes in, tries to start firing up the engines. Now, as this is going on, they're realizing that time is short because the military are going to destroy this car. So a Kroyer goes out. Now, a Kroyer is the armored warrior. He goes out, jumps out, goes flying through the windshield of one of the military vehicles, slices the thing up, and the truck slams into another truck. They both go off the road. And when that happens, all of a sudden, Space Glider, who is one of the women characters, she goes flying out the window and kind of catches herself. But before she does, she ends up on the window of one of the military vehicles. Guy pulls out a gun, starts shooting at her. She goes down, starts shooting up the tires, and then that vehicle slams into another one, and she's like, oh, did you see what I just did? I just took out those two giant vehicles. That was great. And then a Kroyer just flies by, and they both get back on the ship, or back on the truck as it's escaping. Now they're being chased by helicopters, and what is intimidating to the Micronauts is they're looking over going, that thing is huge. They're looking up going, that's as big as our ship. That's as big as the transport, a spaceport that we will dock in. So they're freaking out about that, thinking this is going to be the end. This is where it's all going to fall apart. And then they get their ship going. The ship goes out and shoots out the helicopters. The helicopters crash. And then they're celebrating their victory, wondering what's going on. And then they're also trying to figure out how are they going to get home. They first find out that the entropy cloud, which is sort of engulfing the microverse, is what got them here. Because
the entropy cloud.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's killing everything.
Yeah. No, it's entropy.
Yeah. That's it. And so they realize that there is a little bit of the entropy cloud on Earth. And they're know what? Maybe if we go there, we'll be able to find a way to get home. So as they're figuring that they're going to get that, they start going, they land about where it is, and they come across this place in the woods. And as they get out, they're walking around and they're marveling at the height of the trees, and you know the insects are their size, which made me remember back to when they first came to Earth in the old Marvel series,
uh-huh.
and how they hooked up with Ant-Man, which I thought was great. Ant-Man and Micronauts, they teamed up, they helped each other out. So as they're walking through, they're seeing these sort of buildings that are their size, that are underneath rocks and stuff that people would normally see. And they're saying, I didn't know that Earth people had the architecture like ours. And this is like 1,000 years old. And then they're thinking, but why would it be small? Why would they have done that? And as they start walking through, you see that there are a bunch of insectivoids, which is what they were called in the original Marvel series. They are now circling around where they are on the roofs or on the walls of this place that they've walked into. And they're like, we come in peace. We're not here to cause any problems. Can you take us to your leader? And they say,
that always goes well. Yeah.
They start laughing at him about that. And then a voice off camera says, I'm sure that leader is the right term. I prefer shepherd, though. And you turn the page and you see it is sort of a sphinx with spider legs that comes walking out. And then it says, hello, Pharaoid. I have been waiting a long time for your arrival. And the thing about the Sphinx and why it's so crazy is Oz, who's the main character, his toy designation is the Pharaoh. So this has some tie-in to him. When you used to buy, when you would buy the Pharaoh figure as a kid, the Micronaut would have a cool looking figure, and it would come with a, like a sphinx that would open up.
Oh, okay.
And it would be like his hibernation chamber for all sorts of crazy stuff. So
I never had a Micronaut ever.
Oh, I love Micronauts.
Now, do you still have?
No.
You have none?
I was never big into the Micronauts, but I bought a bunch. I love the comic. Comic's one of my favorite of all time. But I would buy the Micronaut figure sort of just to augment my Star Wars figures. Like, they had creatures, so I would buy them, and they ended up in the Star Wars universe.
Okay.
So that's how I did that. So a great, great series. I think they just put it in trade. And in fact, they did, because there's an ad for it in this book. So if you have not picked this one up, $20, 152 pages, I believe you get the first six or seven stories in here, and it's just great stuff. So if you're crazy and excited about what's going on at IDW with the toy line, and Brian, I will show you the cover of the G.I. Joe number one.
Very nice.
Which
Who's
is making
doing the artwork
me
on
really
that?
Excited about that. Milichiganis? I have no idea. But that cover might also be by somebody else. So I don't know, but it looks really good.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yep.
Not a Micronauts guy, but I will be checking out some G.I. Joe.
Yes.
We are going to hop over to Dark Horse now. And we're going to talk about a new book called Dead Inside. This book is written by John Arcudi, art by Tony Fazzula, colors by Andre May, letters by Joe Sabino, covers by Dave Johnson, and the editor on this book is Daniel Chabon. Now, this book starts off with a pretty brutal murder, and I really didn't know what to expect going into this book. I know it stars a female detective. I did not know what the particular story was about, but you start off and you see someone sort of narrating about hate. And it's someone saying, I hate you. Sometimes I used to say this to my mom when I was a little girl, like the other little girls. And mom used to tell me that hate was something too big for me to understand. And she's going on to say, you know, but over the years, like I realized that hate is not really a big thing. It's a very small thing. Love is the thing that's big and hate's not that big. And as she's narrating this stuff, you're seeing that someone's getting killed. And you turn the page and you see that this is taking place inside of a prison, and you see this wiry, skinny little inmate who has just brutally murdered a guy that's about five times his size in his cell. And you turn the page and all of a sudden you've got the lieutenant who is making a call on the phone, and our detective, whose name is... of course, I'm not seeing it. But she gets this phone call. Oh, Caruso. Detective Caruso. She gets this call, and I think her first name is Lynn. And the lieutenant is saying, you need to get down to the jail right now. There's been a murder. And you see that she is assigned to the jail crimes unit, which goes and investigates crimes that happen, obviously, inside the prison. So she goes there, and you get your first good look at this guy who's been murdered. And his entire lower torso has just been mangled. And she's sitting there talking to one of the guards that works there, saying, that security camera over there should tell us everything that we need. And the guard's like, yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get the budget for the security stuff. And so that camera doesn't really work anymore and all that kind of stuff. So right off the bat, now they don't have a video of what happened. And she's trying to figure out what the motive was. They tell her that there's another body in the kitchen. And so she goes down to the kitchen, and you see that there is a guy who looks like the guy who was murdering this guy in the beginning of the issue, who hung himself, and they find a bloody knife on the ground. So the guards are pretty much saying, yeah, this is like open and shut. And she's kind of asking more questions about like, okay, so how did he get down here and who was on duty and all this kind of stuff. And they're kind of not railroading her, but they're kind of making it seem like this thing seems to solve itself. Like, I don't know what you're asking all these questions for. And she says, well, you know, you guys had the janitor come in and mop up the floor here. You can't do that. This is a crime scene. Like, nothing's being preserved. And they're like, well, you got the knife. So, like, what's the problem here? She goes and she meets with the warden, and the security camera from the kitchen was actually working. And so they see this guy come in and get ready to hang himself, and he's holding the bloody knife and stuff like that. So from the warden's perspective, he's saying, well, I mean, he went into the kitchen with the bloody knife, and that's pretty much to tell you everything you need to know. And she says, hold on a second, roll that tape back. And you see a part in the tape where the guy goes to the refrigerator and takes out like a carton of milk and drinks the entire thing like in 5 seconds. And she's like, doesn't that seem weird to you? Like, he looks like he's on something, like he's on some drugs, he's tweaking out or something like that. And the warden's saying, It's milk. What are you worried about?
Body
she
good.
Says, you had somebody come in and clean up the plate. You can't do that. And he says, well, you're mad at us because we mopped up the milk? Like, I don't know what your problem is. And so he says, your officers have been rushing me through the prison. Crime scenes have been tampered with, but I'm doing an autopsy on this body. Next thing you know, she starts storming out of there because it seems like nobody's cooperating with her. And she runs into a guy who's like a case manager on the way out. And the guy had been talking to a prisoner. And the guy says to her, detective, can I talk to you for a minute? And she says, no, not now. I got stuff to do. And the inmate that was there says, see, I told you nobody would believe me. And she kind of stops for a second and she goes over. And this caseworker is saying, look, this guy's telling me something's going on in this prison here and nobody believes him. I'd like to talk to you more about it. And the detective is like, Caruso's like, no, I got to go. I got stuff to do. He gives her his card and she kind of storms out of there. And she says, I'll call you when I have a minute. So next thing you know, she's meeting with her lieutenant and the lieutenant's saying, no, you don't need to do an autopsy on this one. And she's like, what are you talking about? First I get it from these guys. Now I'm getting it from you. Something's going on here. This murder isn't as cut and dry as everybody's making it out to be. And the lieutenant, after they have sort of a big argument about it, says, why don't you take the rest of the day off? So now she goes home and she's kind of having a few glasses of wine. Her ex-husband comes over. That's, you know, he seems like a nice guy, but he came over to tell her that he's getting remarried. So that didn't go well mm-hmm. for her. So she's out back drinking her wine and the neighbor comes over and she's kind of talking about the case with her. And she's saying, you know, all I want to do is get an autopsy because I think that this guy took some kind of pill or something before and they won't let me cut him open to see him, blah, 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 blah. And the neighbor says to her, well, if he just took the pill, then it would still be in his stomach. You don't need to cut him open. You can take an x-ray or something. And she's like, holy crap. So she calls the caseworker that had been talking to her earlier in the day, and she's half in the bag at this point. So she makes the guy come pick her up, and they go to the medical examiner's office, and they make the guy take an x-ray of the body. And she says, you know, is it visible? Can you see the pill? He says, oh, yeah, it's a pill made out of lead. And when you look, it looks like a bullet casing that this guy has that he swallowed. And that's the way the first issue ends. So lots of questions raised from this first issue of Dead Inside. But I like the idea that, first of all, the whole idea of like the jail crimes unit, you never think of that.
Yeah.
Right. You never think of the detectives that are assigned specifically to deal with cases that happen in the prison.
You almost just think they're going to let it go. You're already in prison anyway.
Or that the warden deals with it. That whole thing is kind of interesting to me in the first place. But then the idea that there's clearly something else going on here and people are trying to cover it up. And now she sees this thing that the guy swallowed and it's like a bullet or something. So definitely going to check out the next issue of that. I'm a fan of crime drama, not the crap on TV, the procedurals that we have nowadays, but a good crime drama I'm big into. So I will be picking up the rest of that series. So that's my comics. Mm. Now, we would be remiss, Matthew, if we wrapped up this particular episode right before Christmas without talking about the new Star Wars movie that came out last week, Rogue One.
Amazing.
So you saw it that morning.
Friday afternoon.
I saw it Saturday night.
Post-storm. Yep.
Did I see it Saturday night or did I see it Friday night? It was either Friday or Saturday. In any case, I saw it in 3D.
Yep, we saw it in 3D as well.
So I took Parker. The two of us went and saw it. The girls didn't want to go, and we went and saw it together. Best part of the movie, Spider-Man Homecoming trailer. Everything I wanted it to be.
It does look really good.
It looks amazing.
It looks great.
And I had tears in my eyes, as I do every time I see Spider-Man on the big screen. I get the chills.
Yep.
Get a little choked up. And then we get to Rogue One.
Uh-huh.
And right from the beginning, there's no Star Wars crawl.
The crawl is not there.
It just starts.
Yes.
And that should tell you right off the bat that you are in for a different experience than what you would expect from a Star Wars movie. This is not like all the others.
No. And I told it's probably the last 40 minutes of the movie that I'd say the last half hour that it becomes a Star Wars movie. There's moments in it where you're like, oh, it's definitely because of the stormtroopers and all the characters and things like that. But this is – somebody told me beforehand it's a war movie. Just expect it, a war movie. And I'm like, all right, I'll buy that. They give you – at the first 20 minutes of it, half hour, you are getting the story of what is going on.
Right. You get Jyn Erso's background.
Her origin.
So you see that her father was an engineer for the Empire, played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes, from Casino Royale.
And was just in, was he not just in Doctor Strange?
I didn't see that yet.
I think he was the villain in Doctor Strange.
Great actor.
And he was Hannibal.
Yes.
Hannibal from the TV show. So, yes, but obviously Casino Royale is where you would go with that, of course. So you see that he was an engineer for the Empire. He stopped working for them when he realized what basically they were doing and what was going to come of it. And the Empire tracks him down. So they track him down and they take him back. They kill Jin's mom and she basically narrowly escapes and is then found by
I forgot what his
Forrest
name
is. Forrest Whitaker's character. Yep. We're awful with names. We should just say that right off the top. And then you fast forward to current time where she is in jail.
Yep. And she gets captured. She gets caught. And she just, as she is, she gets broken out.
Many years later.
Yes. This is many years later. She gets broken out. And as she is broken out, you see that she is part of, they want to find her dad, is basically what's going on. They want to find her dad. She has no clue because she hasn't seen him for however many years. She doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
So she's about as lost as they are. And they sort of – she gets in with
Cassian, right?
Cassian. Cassian sort of becomes the guy that's going to watch her. You have the robot that is played by the voice
of – K2SO is Alan Tudyk.
Yep. Who does a great job. He's
the best character in the movie.
He is C-3PO without the really – quirky, dummy, stupid parts. He's very sarcastic. Love him.
It continued the tradition of great droids.
Yes.
You know, you got BB-8.
Yep.
Now you got K2SO. Really, really a great character and probably my favorite character in the movie.
And as they go to this planet because they want to get Forrest Whitaker's character.
Yeah.
They need him because he's been fighting the Empire forever. However, he has been fighting sort of on his own. It's almost like
he's an extremist.
He's an extremist. Yeah. It's sort of it was interesting because my youngest who saw it says, this seems a lot like what's going on in the world, like in the Middle East. I said, exactly. It is exactly like what you would see. You've got the extremists not working well with the regulars, and you have just the rebellion is so new. They don't have it locked down yet, which I really liked.
It kind of shows the dark side of the rebellion, which I think was interesting because they're not so squeaky clean. Like Cassian is a guy who has got a lot of blood on his hands.
Yep.
You know, Jyn is a girl who doesn't want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And ends up sort of getting sucked into it. And everybody has a story that becomes part of this crew. And, you know, obviously at the end of the day, it tells a story that you already know the ending to.
Yes.
You know that people died getting the plans for the Death Star that reveal the weakness in the Death Star. The big sort of, I don't want to say change, but the big elaboration in this movie is that it was an intentional design flaw.
Which always has been the big thing with every Star Wars person. Like when we saw it as kids, we didn't care. We're like, oh my God, Luke Skywalker blew the thing up with photon torpedoes. That was awesome.
And everybody since then has been like, what a stupid design that they would have.
Yes.
Why would that weakness be there? Well, what they've now retconned into the story is that, well, it's because the guy put it there. It was Jyn's father who created a way for that to be destroyed if people were able to find it.
Yes. And that is not anything that is so out of character of people living in war times, because when the Germans were grabbing Russian scientists to help them develop weapons, they were creating duds. That has always gone on.
And let's just say for the record, it's Star Wars.
Yes.
Jar Jar Binks has been a part of Star Wars. You're not allowed to say that things don't make sense in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Or that something is too far-fetched.
Yes.
We're talking about Star Wars.
It says it in the title.
Yes. It says both Star and Wars in the title. Yeah. It is a science fiction series. Like the fact that some people are arguing like that's a stupid explanation, like, is to me is beyond me.
Yes.
Because now we know our good buddy Mitch Halleck, very upset about this. Very upset that this sort of added this to the lore. And I just think that's funny that some people are really upset about it. To me, so clearly you mentioned the last half hour, last 45 minutes. epic.
Yes.
Right? The actual battle, is it Scarif?
Yes.
The actual battle that takes place on Scarif, both in the skies, out in space above the planet, and down on the planet, phenomenal.
And
it is a Dirty Dozen-esque execution of that part of the movie.
And very cool choice to have it be sort of a tropical paradise.
Right.
Because you've got a battle going on on the sands and the beach.
Yes.
Palm trees. You have walkers coming through and knocking over palm trees.
Yes. The sort of contrasting concepts yep. that are happening were sort of well executed. You sort of knew where things were going to go. Although I'm surprised at how many people were surprised by how it played out.
My daughter, my youngest, looked at me and said, "None of these people are in the Star Wars movies afterwards, are they?" I said, "Nope." And she goes, "Oh my gosh, they're all going to die."
Yeah,
and
like
because she really fell into the love. And not,
was there any point going in where you thought for a moment that that wasn't going to be the way that it ended?
Exactly.
Right. Like I just assumed from the get-go that I would have been disappointed had any of them lived.
Yeah.
Because you can't squeeze a happy ending out of that. Like, although they kind of did. I mean, it was certainly an emotional and a touching sort of ending to it. But at the same time, you knew going in that it was a suicide mission. That was what was going to happen. So
I have to see it again because I was very distracted by everything. Like, I'm looking for every clue. I'm looking for all the Easter eggs.
The blue milk.
The blue milk. Yeah. They put a ton of stuff in there. They even threw two mentions of Rebels in there. They had Chopper the droid was in there walking around, and they mentioned the ghost ship, and they also mentioned the girl by her as a general because she's now a general on Rebels.
Yep.
So they called her when they were calling, having all the wings line up and report in. But the end of it, I'll say the last 10 minutes before anybody even, because we won't spoil this, I will just say Darth Vader, you actually get to see the dude go nuts and fight and kill things.
That was great.
Yes.
What did you think of the CGI?
There were moments that I did. Oh, you mean like with Governor Tarkin?
There's two characters.
Yes.
That are completely 100% CGI.
We won't say the second, although everybody's going to probably pretty much guess who it is. But you had Governor Tarkin, who
was Peter Cushing, right?
Peter Cushing was the original actor who played him. He's been gone for an awful lot of years. But
I thought he was fantastic.
I thought he looked great because
he was
creepy.
Because I knew the first time he came on screen, obviously, that it was CGI. But I specifically paid attention to that throughout the movie. And I kept thinking to myself, like, boy, they did a really good job with him. Like, they really, his facial expressions, his eyes, like... And they never shied away from him being on camera, which I thought was really interesting. Like that was a bold choice.
Center. Yeah. Like he wasn't hiding in the shadows.
Right.
You saw him.
Yeah. And he was total CGI. So that I thought was interesting. And I thought that worked.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, the Princess Leia thing at the end, I did not think worked as well.
I didn't either.
And I think that I would have been happier if they just showed her from behind.
Like they did at first.
And you heard her voice. And they just ended it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm totally fine that they did that. Mm-hmm. Like, and that doesn't take away from the movie for me. I just thought that the Tarkin CGI was so good.
Yeah.
But again, most of that's in the dark. Lots of shadows, lots of stuff like that. The Leia part, she's dressed in white. It's in a white room. It's very lit. It's just a different...
Yeah.
It's harder to pull off. And I don't think that came off as well. But yeah, if you didn't get chills when you watched basically the beginning of Star Wars.
Yes.
At the end of Rogue One.
Which is what that's all I wanted.
Like that, walking out of the theater, like your immediate thought is, I need to go watch Star Wars right now.
Yep.
Like I have to go watch that right now. So, I mean, overall, I thought the movie was great. There was parts of it, I didn't think it was necessarily edited super well. And the first half specifically.
Yeah.
I thought the last act of the movie, you know, that last third of the movie, phenomenal.
Yep.
Just really well executed. Gareth Edwards is the director of that. He directed a movie called Monsters, which was really good. It was sort of like an indie movie. And then he directed Godzilla, which I thought he did a good job with. And he got the Godzilla job off of Monsters that he did.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's right.
It was his execution of Godzilla, I believe, that got him this particular movie. So... I think he did a good job with the big stuff. It was some of the other that there's a lot of sort of quick cuts to storylines that are happening like all throughout that just felt a little bit disjointed to me. Like you, when the Dirty Dozen, when things started to happen in the climax of that movie, you knew and cared about all of that cast.
Yes.
I did not feel the same attachment to most of the characters in Jin's group.
Yeah.
They were all great. They were all cool characters.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I knew them when they made the ultimate sacrifice. Maybe the pilot is the one that I felt like got the most character development because you saw him come with the message. You saw him get tortured.
Mm-hmm.
You saw him get rescued. Like you had spent enough time with him. You know, him and Cassian are probably outside of Jin are the two that are the most sort of developed. And everybody else kind of got kind of short shrift, I think. But having said that, I super enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
When I heard people saying that it was better than Force Awakens, I had to push the pause button there because to me,
I'm one of those.
I cannot put it above. Force Awakens to me is just like so good.
I think for me, like my first reaction right away was this is my third favorite. Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
A New Hope.
Sure.
This one. It knocked The Phantom Menace out of number three.
Well, I mean, it should do that, Matthew, because The Phantom Menace shouldn't be anywhere near your top three. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about where it sort of sits for me. I think that I shouldn't say that. What I will say is that this negates any reason to have the prequel trilogy at all anymore.
Mm.
So I never have to watch that again, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I don't have to watch any of it at all. I can literally just, to me, there's now four Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
There's Rogue One. Then there's A New Hope. There's five.
Yeah.
So there's Rogue One. There's the original trilogy. And then there's The Force Awakens. It's awesome. It's totally awesome.
There you go.
So they did make a movie that was good enough to erase three bad movies. But in terms of where it sits with the original trilogy with me, like, nothing will ever beat Empire Strikes Back, ever. I can't even imagine a scenario where any of the new movies they ever make will ever beat Empire Strikes Back.
That's hard.
It's just not beatable. It's the best.
Yep.
This might be better than Return of the Jedi for me.
For me, that's my least favorite of all of them. I do not like Return of the Jedi.
I could see maybe Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, Force Awakens, Rogue One, Jedi. I could see that maybe.
I could live with that.
I'll have to think about that a little bit more. And I probably will see it again in standard, you know, without 3D.
Yeah.
Because 3D is a little darker.
It was.
And I don't like that aspect of 3D. But it was cool to see in 3D.
There was a couple things that I, you know, as we close up this part, one of the big things that I really, really liked was, granted, so when you see the special effects of this movie, then you run home and you put on A New Hope. You're like, what the heck? Did they make this with pipe cleaners
and
all that stuff? Because there was no way that you could ever match up. I mean, I can watch Star Wars now and I don't shudder at any of it, like going, the effects aren't that great, because there was a magic. It was practical. 90% of it was practical.
Practical is my favorite anyways.
They did such a great job with that. But what I loved was when you went into the Rebel headquarters, they had those old school glass boards with all the blue circles and lines on them.
Yep.
That was what they had on the Rebel base on Yavin 4. That was what they had in the original movie, so that was what they threw in there.
Exactly.
With all the tech.
Yeah.
And when they brought up the Death Star plans, you're seeing like CGI all around you. And when they pull up the Death Star plans, it's that ball, which came out of an Atari game. It was like one bit.
It's awesome.
And you're like, this is perfect that they did that, that they matched it up just like that.
I did like that old school feel that the movie had to it. And there was, you know, we talked about the CGI stuff, but there was a ton of practical effects in Rogue One deliberately.
Yes.
And I appreciated that. I always appreciate that. And really, in general, the Star Wars series overall has had a ton of practical effects in it, which is good.
And the other favorite thing about the entire movie was the fact that you are seeing some stormtroopers in this movie that are bad. They yeah. are nasty. And they keep coming. And they seem to know how to fire their weapons. Because
yes.
as the years have gone on, they weren't as good. Like the standards of joining the stormtrooper ranks
I
want to
say it's
dropped.
When they started contracting out the blaster assembly that they started yeah. getting inferior weapons. And that resulted in the aiming being off and stuff like that.
Yeah, but, you lose the Death Star, yeah. you got to cut corners somewhere to make it up.
I mean, but overall, Rogue One, very good.
Yes.
You obviously
loved it
to the point where it's knocking other movies out of your top three.
Yep.
I loved it enough that I will absolutely be seeing it again. And I do firmly believe that I have no use for the prequels now at all, which is great. So that saves me about 5 hours if I'm sitting down to watch the Star Wars marathon.
Yeah.
I could just start with Rogue One.
And I can easily do every Christmas having a Star Wars movie because next year we're going to have Episode 8.
Yeah, I mean, I worry about that a little bit, but... That's irrelevant. Like there's no stopping that train
until
now.
They suck. Until it's terrible.
Until it's like Marvel. It. Until it stops making money.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange is making money out there right now. Like until something bombs.
Yep.
There's no slowing that train down.
Yep.
So
I think next is, I'm not sure if it's going to be Boba Fett or young Han Solo.
I thought it was young Han Solo.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the two. So yeah. either one, we'll take it.
Yeah, either one will be fine. So good stuff there. That is going to wrap up this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Yes.
Happy New Year. We might squeeze one in before the New Year as well, but we will try to get this episode out, if not tomorrow, which is Friday, then by Christmas Eve, so that you have something to listen to while you're either wrapping those presents really late or... getting up early and putting the coffee on and getting ready for the kids to come downstairs and all that kind of good stuff
yep.
or whatever, or just hanging out because you don't celebrate Christmas, watching the myriad of awesome basketball games that are on, or reading comics that you bought for yourself.
And football, because we're actually going to have football on.
Well, that's right. We have football on Christmas Eve. Wow. Which I'll leave you with this. I didn't even make the playoffs in our Yahoo Fantasy Football League. I believe the championship game is going on right now.
I've got to check it because I did not even look.
I didn't even make the playoffs in this one. But in my NFL.com fantasy league, I am currently in the championship.
Nice. Congratulations.
In the championship. So that's going to do it for this episode. We will talk to you soon. This is Brian and Matt signing off. And take care of each other.
Ho, ho, ho.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.